Hello and welcome to The Joy of Writing. I'm your host, Mark Carew. In this series, I will be talking to authors about the fun, the satisfaction, the joy they get from writing novels.
It's a pleasure to talk again with Amanthi Harris, author of Beautiful Place. I began by asking Amanthi what advice she would give to writers at the start of their writing journey.
I would say, well, the very sort of firm thing is to read, I would say, and so the most important thing is to read what you like and to find the authors that you really connect with, and to read just exactly what you want to read, I would say, because I didn't have a traditional route into writing, and that I didn't do a creative writing MA, or I didn't read English, and all of which I actually wanted to read English. I very much wanted to, but I read sciences and law, so chemistry and then law. So I found my way to the fiction I was drawn to through kind of talking to my friends and who were all studying art subjects. And also, I worked in the second hand. I quit the law and worked in the second hand bookshop. And my job was to sort out the books that came from auctions and boxes, and so my job was to put everything in alphabetical order. So yeah. I sort of was able to read my way through. It was a really lovely literary bookshop in Clifton Village in Bristol, I sort of read my way through from A to Z. But I was able to also see the authors that I really connected with. So and I didn't feel like as if I had to read certain authors. I very much read what I wanted to, and they led to other people. So, and also I read a lot of criticism as well, connected to those authors. So then you'd get references to other authors that you probably would be interested in. And so yeah. I mean, I'm still doing that to some extent. Still reading around sort of authors I like, and then finding new authors as a result, or new recommendations for short stories or novellas as a result. So I think that was, for me, the nicest thing about writing, was that the reading suddenly had a purpose. And really, before, having read through curiosity and for entertainment, suddenly reading was about learning about myself, and why I was drawn to certain books, why certain types of writing appealed, and why I felt so excited. And then as I was writing more seriously, it was very much a sort of technical analysis. I've never read in the old way again, really. Now everything is looked at in this sort of technical way. How? Why did that work? It's moved me, but why? And you look at why sentences. You know.
So when you're reading now, you're looking at, oh, I wonder how the author's done this, or
always now everything is going through a different filter. I'd say it doesn't stop. Yeah. Be enjoying something, but it does actually mean that I give up on books quite quickly as well. If I feel that this isn't really, I'm not going to learn something, or I kind of move on quite quickly. I don't read books all the way through to the end if I feel that it's a bit of a construct and it's a bit, right. You know. So you kind of learn what works and why it works, and how that could help you with your own work. So I'd say the reading was a huge part of writing.
And you mentioned being able to go from one author to another because of their related sort of the way they're related. Did that sort of come out in the bookshop, and you're telling and giving advice to customers on what they might like?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the sense that people would say, you know, they would say they like a certain person, I would say, like, you know, and you'd say, well, you know, they were influenced by so-and-so, have you read them? And, oh, no, and then, you know, they move on. So, for example, one of my favourite authors is Catherine Mansfield, and she was heavily influenced by Chekhov. And
Yes, I thought that.
Yeah, absolutely. Those short stories of Chekhov's stories were very much a sort of big influence for her. And I'd been reading Chekhov's plays, as you know, before I came across Catherine Mansfield. And then I'd read about her, and I'm looking her up. I read that she'd been influenced by Chekhov. So I returned to Chekhov, but read the short fiction. So it's all that sort of, it's a kind of a big network, like a web of kind of connections. And that's what's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I think people who do want to write something, they've got to understand that reading is you know, read everything.
Yeah.
Read everything that interests you. Read the cornflakes packet on the table in the morning, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Reading is super important. Do you think, because you have a background in sciences and we share that, do you think what you were asked to learn in the sciences in any way came along and helped you in your approach to writing, or the way you look at how authors write? A sort of more analytical turn of mind?
Probably not, actually. I don't know. I don't know if it's...
Can't claim that.
No, I don't think so. Because I never really felt a connection between the two. The science, studying chemistry, was just something I was sort of pushed into some extent. And the writing was almost a kind of... a silent sort of protest, reading was my sort of secret sort of thing I did. You know, I would be given money to go and buy textbooks, and I would end up sort of coming home with a load of Chekhov, or and then I discovered Ibsen, so then I was buying Ibsen plays, but I hadn't bought the chemistry textbooks, you know. But my shelves were so different. Once I was sort of free at university, I was able to kind of really read, and I wasn't really a very committed sort of science student, and I don't think I should have been doing that at all, really. It was very much sort of pressure to do this, because I was good at sciences at school, and you know, you kind of get nudged along these routes and you kind of agree to things without really knowing what you are, how much it matters that you're not, that you should be doing something else. So when I was at university, I was at Bristol, there was this wonderful art house cinema, for example, and so I used to go and watch art house movies, and that was my first sort of experience of these this type of film, you know, Roma, Jacques Rivette, you know, all these amazing ways of telling stories, and in fact a lot of Roma's stories are based on short stories he'd written and not been able to get published. So it was a way, the whole opening up of stories and storytelling and the act, sort of the act of communicating stories became obviously that was what I was interested in. And so I would say that also, in terms of if you're starting to write, to explore film, to explore everything, theatre, not just stick with writing, and also to kind of get your work out in some way. You know, it's really hard, and just purely through writing. So I found it easier to kind of exhibit artwork as well, because I have an art background as well. To kind of make things and to put, but they can be coming from the same source. To some extent, so I might be working with a folk tale or a fairy story or something that has some relevance to the characters in my novel, but I can also make art to do with these emotions or these feelings. And so when the work is out there and people are engaging with it and you're talking about it, that's when the ideas develop. So it's really hard with writing. It's so hard because you can't you know, stand on a street corner and sing it or put it on a lovely wall and for people to look at and engage with. So I would say if there's any way of engaging with other people, organizing some readings or making a new type of performance or something where people can interact with your work and you can then see your work in a more objective eye, then that would, I'm sure, benefit your work.
Yeah, so it's really about expression of yourself through some form.
Yes.
That works for you, so maybe not just limit it to writing.
Yes, because it doesn't take away, because I used to worry that it would take away from my writing if I did other things, and if I didn't completely, you know, focused on the stories or the novel or whatever. But then to do other things kind of helps it expand. So yeah, and also, you know, I did my community project, storytelling project, I did, it's called Story Hug, and I was taking it through to the different community groups, telling stories. It didn't seem entirely related to the novel I was working on, but I think, you know, like I was saying in the previous podcast, the whole idea of making up stories and telling stories and being kind of free and loose and kind of experimenting and playful, actually playing around,
yeah,
with, really gave me a lot of confidence when it came to being more adventurous with the writing.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's practice, isn't it? It's deliberate practice,
yes,
as they say. And then the idea of play is very useful. And I don't know if you know these things called story cubes.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
So what a genius idea. And that's just a lovely little game you can play and, you know, roll the dice, look at the images and just conjure up some,
yes,
some story or scene from it. It's so useful. But it's like you're saying, it's a way of expressing yourself and getting, yeah, some practice in the whole art of telling a story.
Yep.
Yeah, these are definitely things that would help anybody who wants to pursue this sort of vague dream or, you know, I fancy writing a novel,
yep,
kind of thing.
Just a sort of little practice runs. I mean, people, I know I've seen online people using tarot cards.
Yes, that's a classic, yeah.
Or Loteria cards. I use my story group sometimes just to sort of pick three kind of images and get them to make up stories with them. And yeah, really just having fun with it, really.
Yeah, have fun, do it.
Yes, exactly, yeah, do it, that's the other thing.
Do it would be a good idea. You mentioned Catherine Mansfield, and I know she is the author of one of your favourite works, one that has a great impact on you, and you are inspired by and you absolutely loved and keep coming back to. Can you tell us a bit about why that novella is so important to you?
Yeah, so it's At the Bay, and is one of her kind of great stories. It's a novella based on her family. So there are several sort of New Zealand stories that she's very famous for. And what I really love about it is how evocative this little world is. She creates this world of this family staying by the sea, and all their sort of friends and the maid and she goes into each person's world and their thoughts and their interactions and very, very delicately captures whole personalities, whole relationships in these little glimpses into life. And of course the language is incredibly simple but beautiful, and so you think it's sort of effortless, but it's so cleverly put together, the images, the descriptions, so that you suddenly you feel what she's hoping you'll feel, I guess. And it's sort of rich read. And so I kind of love the way it also the whole thing happens in one day. So it starts in the morning, and it makes the whole day seem like a lifetime. You know, in the course of that time, the grandmother has thought about her son who died in the war. There's relation that the mother has thought about how whether she likes mothering or, you know, and her thoughts about her new baby. And
she's not very maternal, is that right?
Yeah, but just at the end of that little segment, she feels love for the baby, and that is captured in that beautiful this is the fourth child, and somehow suddenly she feels a surge of love for this child, and which she hadn't felt with the three previous children. And all of that's captured in one and a half pages, you know, amazing and so beautiful and so languid. And so yeah, I mean, it's kind of like my dream, like a dream short story, really, so perfect in every way. And so I always kind of go back to it in some way, because although I've written this giant novel, I really love the idea of shorter works which can do something amazing. So that's my kind of goal, is to write something really compact and intense like that. So yeah, I'm sort of inspired by the kind of the richness of it.
I was thinking that the setting is a great one, you know, the bay, the beach, the coast, and languid is absolutely the right word for it. I mean, you have you know, it's a setting where people go to relax and enjoy themselves, but also go for maybe a bit of solitude and think and have a bit of peace. Yeah. I mean, there's so much you could do, I think, you know, where the sky meets the water and the land. I mean, it's It's
but also they're kind of they're living there as well. So the father goes to work in the morning, and she captures that whole kind of the energy of this guy who's getting ready for work, and he wants everything ready and the porridge, and everybody else is in sort of slight holiday mode, and he's impatient with them, and she captures all of that. This part of the morning, one of the scenes, and how you know he misunderstands one of the children, and then almost the kind of relief as he goes, and the house settles into its kind of more gentle daytime mode, and all the tensions between the men, so it's all there in there. So there's a sort of different moods and different ways of living are all in this one story.
Have you found any element of that cropping up into what you write? Do you ever catch yourself and go, oh yes, I know where this is coming from?
I'm sure it was there always, all the way through when I was writing. Although I said, you know, mine was a different setup in my book. There was this sense of the way you feel, and feeling is kind of how the without. I mean, my story as a novel has this huge sort of big plot about the Padma's natural father. Definite plot, but without aside of that, there's a kind of a feeling of being inside the villa, what it feels like at different times of day, being in the garden, what the veranda feels like, and all these feelings. I'm sure what I liked about At the Bay was this sense of a real of being there, what it was like to be on the beach, what it was like to be inside the house, what it was like in the bedroom in the afternoon with the blinds clothes and the grandmother and Kezia, the character, talking. All the different aspects of being inside the house, being outside it, walk at night, what it was like when Beryl goes outside. And so I'm sure that influenced me very much to kind of explore the feeling of occupying a house and a garden and with the beach outside.
Yeah, was it Angela Carter who said make it real or something?
Yeah.
Something like, you know, if you're writing a story, then you really have to convince the reader this is what it is meant to be. And that sounds very much like that, you know. Can you really imagine being in this place, on the veranda, in the garden, wherever? It's those details which are hard to do, but once you master them, then you can pull that trick off. Yeah.
I think it helped that for her writing that story that she was drawing very heavily on her childhood, and she was very much in a way she was trying to reassess her childhood and recapture something. She's living so far away, and I suppose a similar motivation drove me, because I was, you know, I was looking back at my childhood in Sri Lanka, and although I grew up in Colombo and not by the on the southern coast, I did grow up close to the sea, and it was a house that had a big garden and sort of very kind of rustic feel to, even though we were at the edge of the city at the time, and so there was a sense of trying to capture something, and I think that sort of a need to capture something drives you to find the right words, the right images to convey that feeling being in the place, so that it can feel real.
It's interesting you mention that for childhood, trying to capture what your childhood means. I mean, I recently wrote a story, well, not that recently, but over a few years wrote a story trying to capture mine, because I thought, well, this is such an important thing.
Yeah.
It needs to be put down on paper. And I was wondering also whether writers tend to have a bit more of an emotional memory about places.
Yeah.
You know, whereas... I don't know, many other people might think, oh, you know, that was childhood, but I don't remember it very strongly. But it's almost gets to Proustian levels with, you know, the smell of cooking evokes a whole, you know, past era sort of thing.
Although maybe everybody could, if they wanted to access all those memories, you know, as writers, we know that that's where the strongest sort of memories might lie, so we might go back to it more curious perhaps, or more determinedly to re-engage with it. And I think possibly people do remember all this stuff, but only when they kind of really let themselves think about it. I think when you write, you kind of you're making yourself go back firmly, aren't you, into that part?
Yeah. Really, I mean, there's some bits, you know, you'd think, well, if I just thought about this really strongly, I would literally go back in time. Yeah. It gets so strong. It's quite a peculiar thing. Fantastic. Well, At the Bay goes on the to-be-read pile.
Absolutely.
Which is swaying in the office. And I don't know when I'm going to get around to this, but hey, there's time to do it now.
At the moment.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Amanthi. Fascinating as always. Thank you. And so we come to the end of the first series of The Joy of Writing. I'd like to thank my guests, Amanthi Harris, Sally Harris, and Eleanor Anstruther, for being such interesting and insightful interviewees. The Joy of Writing will be back in whatever version of reality comes next.